So, where are we going? What is guiding us on our way? How do we even know where to go? Now, there are some good pastoral questions, answers to these questions that I am required to give to you. We are going where God calls us, of course, to the best of our ability to discern where God is calling us. And heck, here at Ark and Dove, we even have long-range planning teams. So we have some pretty solid ideas about where we're heading, at least in the next 3 years. But outside of the things I have a little control over, these can be really uncomfortable questions. Daunting and scary questions, even. Especially, it feels for many of us at this moment in history. Where is our country going? Where is our world going? Where is our climate going? What struggles are we going to go through over the next few years that we don't anticipate yet? And what are we going to lose? So Chinese-American philosopher and Detroit-based community organizer Grace Leebogs was known to have asked the following question at her public events later in her life. She would ask, "What time is it on the clock of the world?" And I guess that's what I'm asking too. Is there world enough and time to be who God is calling us to be? To build the world that God is calling us to build? Is that proverbial arc of the universe even a little bendable toward justice at this point in the face of forces that we might call evil, that seek to spread fear and increase discrimination, that are fine with stripping away human dignity and allowing increased suffering? Happy New Year. I'm here to bum you out, as usual. But in all honesty, in the context in which we live, the Magi are pretty compelling characters. We call them wise men. It's not clear what their gender was or how many of them there were, so we're going to call them Magi for most of the rest of the sermon. So they're pretty compelling, wise people who seem supernaturally confident. They have no doubt where they should be going. They are guided absurdly or irrefutably, or both, by something written in the stars. What confidence they have! I'm a little jealous. What clear direction! I mean, I assume. We don't have much information about them beyond this passage. We don't know what caused them to plan this trip, if there were generations of planning in advance. If it was a spur of the moment thing, it was a Friday night gone off the wheels, you never know. We don't even know what happened on their travels themselves, what dangers they faced, what wrong turns they took. All we know is about their arrival. And also, I think their boldness. They approached the guy, the king, with the title the King of the Jews or King of the Judeans. Herod the Great, who was not great by most measures. He had family members murdered, things like that. Just not a good guy. So they approach him and they ask him, "Where can we find the newer king of the Judeans? You know, your replacement." The guy with the star predicting his arrival, the real one, with phenomenal cosmic powers, or whatever it is they are anticipating. These guys are troublemakers. They had to have known that this line of inquiry was not going to land well with a thin-skinned, power-hungry tyrant. Honestly, they had to know. So, what is it that they were up to? What did they think that they were doing? It's starting to look like madness. They saddled up their beasts, camels, maybe, if we take Isaiah as an acknowledgement of this, but we don't know. They packed really expensive gifts, big heavy also, and they traveled an untold distance at great danger to themselves. They did all of this to confront a volatile king from a foreign land who had no power over them if they had stayed at home. They did all this because of what the stars were saying. I ask this with all proper respect. Were they stupid? Were they desperate? What could they have been thinking? So if you spent time with us in worship during the season of Advent, you know that Tim and I used Kelly Nikundeha's book, The First Advent in Palestine, to guide our collaborative sermon series. We explored the historic context in which Jesus arrived into the world. We all considered with our sacred imaginations what it might have been like for Zechariah, for Mary, for Elizabeth, for Joseph, to be a part of God's story, each in an extremely personal, wild, risky, and wonderful way. And what a relief it was for my holiday-addled brain, which you saw on display with the prayer, that she has a chapter in the book on the Magi. It's very helpful. And so she helped me to think about them in a different way. The question I've asked in the past about the Magi has been, who were they? Were there three of them? Were they wise? Were they men? Were they religious? And that matters. But the question she pushed me to ask is, why did they come? Why did they come to a far-off land to give honor to a newborn king? So yes, identity is important. Nikundeha identifies these magi, as many scholars do, as sages from indigenous Persian culture. Through history, they were connected to royal power and religion, which were one and the same. They were the prophecy keepers. They were the stewards of wisdom. They were also the keepers of local and civic knowledge. They were the hearts and the minds of the community. And not unlike times in Palestine where Jesus was born, things were a little rough in Persia, too. In 330 BCE, Alexander the Great conquered Persia, another guy calling himself great, there's a theme, and brought Hellenization to the land, but not in an altogether friendly way. As Nikundeha writes, like many in the ancient Near East, Persians believed that kings were connected to divinity. To claim a foreign king was to dethrone not merely their own political leader, but their god. Many people had a deep desire to return to rulers who would respect their Persian kin and their ways, and also their god. So this was the landscape in which the Magi traveled. They were marginalized religious and civic leaders who had not in their lifetime known a Persian king or been permitted to keep their god. And yet they kept the stories alive through the generations. And they kept their eyes on the stars for hope that a new king would rise and help to change their fates. And then a star arose. Was it far away? Yes. Was it the star of a Persian king? No. But were they discerning the possibility of hope? That kings can be born in unlikely circumstances? That they can wrest power from dominating empires? It seems like it. Nikundeha writes of their hope that perhaps if hope can be birthed in Judea, they thought, then it can be birthed in Persia too. What an enormous leap of hope they took then. To see a king afar, a king with whom they may or may not share a god, but one who was born as a hope to the world. That's what the stars were saying. And so onward they went to seek a king. I would love to tell you the rest of the Magi's story, but I'm not an expert in Persian and Greek history, nor did I become one for this sermon. I'm sorry. Nor is there any record of what became of these hopeful wanderers after their encounter with Herod and dreams and Jesus. They left. That's the last we know of them. But what an unlikely thing that they made it into the story of the birth of Jesus. I wonder how transformative that encounter was. How the Magi may have begun to dream of new futures. How everyone in that encounter was changed by that encounter. The Holy Family moved to find love delivered by those who had previously been strangers. Herod and his court shaken by their failure to notice what was going on around them. The Magi by their encounter with the incarnate God. Hope in vulnerability. Sacred light in a humble place. What a difference connections can make. So back to our friend Grace Lee Boggs, philosopher and wise woman in her own right. As a community organizer, she thought a lot about how to make change, how to create a more just world. And she observed that the real engine of change is never critical mass. Dramatic and systemic change begins with critical connections. That is where shaping the future begins. It seems like the Magi, after 300 plus years under Greek leadership, recognized something similar. To bring real change, to stand up to long entrenched powers, powers that suppress and control, you need to grow your team. And not just that, but you also need to grow your imagination through new connections rooted in love and in vulnerability. Hope is not found in violent insurrection or hostile takeover. Hope is found in weaving together our lives with the lives of others, our hopes with the hopes of others, our love with the love of others. The Magi demonstrate that we might have to venture far across boundaries of nation and empire and culture and religion. We might need to humble ourselves through difficult journeys, both literal and figurative. But there is always hope for a new world, beyond the structures and the struggles of the present circumstances. The hope we might find might be found somewhere we never thought to look, in someone we never thought to speak with. But we sought them out anyway, because it was time for hope. What if the Magi are not just there as a proof text, an offhand story to prove that our religion is the most true and the best of them all, and our God can compel everything to do what our God wants to do? But what if instead they're evidence that new worlds emerge when we weave our way through life in mutuality and in relationship? When we hold on to hope, when we imagine new futures, and when we connect with those around us who we never allied ourselves with before, we're practicing the new world that God is breathing into being all around us. What time is it on the clock of the world? According to the Magi, it's time to seek out hope in unlikely places. Let's go.